Hey everyone, welcome to Neighbor Science, the only political economy podcast done by two big dumbasses. I'm Ryan Salisbury.
And I'm Peter DeBeer.
So today we're talking about another billionaire. This one was pretty popular in our poll. It's Peter Thiel.
Yeah. Today we're going to take a long, hard look at the Silicon Valley contrarian libertarian Peter Thiel.
Everyone's favorite vampire or ghoul, depending on which mythology you subscribe to.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about Peter Thiel, who's best known for having been born directly from the pen of Ayn Rand. And this ink blot turned human is the ultimate libertarian dream mare.
Well, you did most of the research for this, so why don't you take it away?
Obviously, I'm going to need you to break the monotony of my voice from time to time.
But, okay. I don't think your voice is monotonous, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, I did have acting classes, so I do know how to moderate my voice and make it sound very different from time to time. Okay, the second most famous of this nightmare ghoul vampire's achievements is apparently sitting on several company boards, including Facebook and Y Combinator. I'm not sure why sitting on a board is considered a major achievement, because I did this for most of high school. And although I caught some, really gnarly waves, I guess I should have gotten sponsored.
Come on, my
jokes on this one are epically good, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I could see why it's considered an achievement. He's like, everyone thinks the Jews are controlling everything, but it's really Peter Thiel.
Yeah. There's an article that I'd like to include in our show notes, that I used for some of my research and whatnot. I haven't put it up there yet. It's from Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
And, the main reason why I wanted to include it is there's a graphic in there that sort of describes what Peter Thiel would look like if it was his own company, which we will discuss in a while.
I saw that one.
What he would look like on, as described through there. And it's extensive. The man's influence is...
Yeah, he looks like an octopus with a top hat and he's smoking a cigarette in one of those fancy cigarette holders from the 20s.
Yeah.
And he's like stretched across the entire earth. That's what it looks like.
Which I find problematic, because the noble octopi don't need this. You know what I mean? They've already got a bad reputation as being from other worlds and whatnot, because their DNA is so unique.
I mean, they are aliens. We know that for a fact. But... that doesn't mean they're hostile or anything.
I'm not even going to touch on this, because I have major issues with the depiction of octopi as being aliens. So he runs in the same circles as other billionaires like Mike Zuckerberg and Ewan Mintz. And I find this to be particularly strange, because running in circles is kind of pointless.
Jesus, man.
No, but seriously, like, for some reason, he voluntarily does this. Now, the best thing I can think is that they all hold hands and chant pagan rituals while praying
to the libertarian. Oh, they definitely do that.
Yeah, they definitely pray to the libertarian god of money.
Dionysus or whatever?
Although he was the Greek god of wine and
same thing. They sell wine, too.
Yeah. True. That is true. Yeah. But this tactic seems to be proving very successful, because it has granted all of these guys the power to own extremely expensive pieces of paper and then to go on to take credit for the work of other more capable people.
So, basic capitalism?
Yes.
The main thing that it is? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and this leads me to the belief that capitalism is a pagan ritual.
It kind of
It's
is.
not so,
I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's
technically,
very religious.
if you want to get very technical about it, it is. Because it is non-Christian and it is a ritual.
Yes.
So, yes, it's a pagan ritual.
It is pagan. Capitalism is paganism. Is this where we start the witch hunt?
We can, yeah, sure. Get together
Sure.
some guys in tricorn hats and the brown suit with the white collar sticking over it with a
Exactly,
blunderbuss.
exactly.
Yeah. And
None
the
of
little
those.
mustache, the like Satan beard, the like mustache and like little soul patch beard. That's a vibe,
Yeah.
right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, I'm not talking about those depictions, like in, what was that movie, Dorothy in Wonderland, or
Van
whatever
Helsing.
it was. Okay. Before we get started into the business side of things, I thought I'd give us a little review of the early years of this great libertarian. So, Thiel's story is
Oh, hell.
he came from humble beginnings.
Hold
Yeah,
on, back up.
and
Start,
I'm
Peter. Start with Teal's story, because the audio cut out for a second.
Ah, okay. Okay, so Thiel's story is an inspiring one. He came from humble beginnings. His parents were German immigrants to the US, where his father became a chemical engineer, and his mother was not. His mother was a naturalized US citizen, and his father was not. And these horrible divides in the family must have been difficult for a young Peter. Especially when the family moved to South Africa and Namibia for several years. It was
I
there
wonder what
in a
years those
school
were.
that, from what I can remember from reading, it was like 4 to like 7 or 10 or something like that.
Okay.
So it was preteen years. And it was there in southern and southwest Africa. In a school that still practiced corporal punishment, that Pouty Teal was first smacked on the hand with a ruler while being forced to wear school uniforms. Sorry, I'm struggling to even read this. It's hard. Okay. Sorry, that was my Jordan Peterson impression.
Okay.
My
Yeah, you have to
apologies.
do the Kermit voice.
I was watching something with Jordan Peterson before this, and it just, oh God, man, that man. Anyway,
Dude,
yeah, so.
actually, witches are real. Dragons are more real than anything.
And it was the birth control pill that ruined society as we know today and caused people to masturbate. Like literally, that's his fucking argument, and I was like, "Oh my God, I want to punch the screen, but it won't hurt him."
So what I was asking about when he moved to South Africa, I just looked it up. It was during apartheid, so that's what I wanted to know.
I don't know, not
Yeah, no, it
100
was because it
percent.
was before. It was in the 70s, mid-70s, so it would have been going on then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it was after he got smacked on the hand with a ruler, while being forced to wear a school uniform, that he decided that he would forever be an individualist cowboy libertarian. This
Yeah,
is according to
those settlers of
several
the West are
of.
well known for not whacking kids on the hand with a ruler and forcing native children to wear school uniforms. That never happened.
Yeah, never ever ever happened.
Great grasp of history he has.
He's very what's the word? Groundbreaking. It was also there that he learned he was good at strategically manipulating power when, as a prodigy, he discovered the game of chess.
So his destiny became manifest.
Oh, that's sharp. That's sharp. I like that. Okay. His parents finally moved back to the US, but Plita's love for chess would never leave him, and he became well respected as a player, yo. He's such a magnificent player that his current International Federation of Chess ranking is 2,199. And just before you think that's not very impressive, remember that there are a massive 2,200 people being ranked.
Okay.
Okay, now Peel
So I
was a
was at
math nerd.
math.
Yeah,
I was
he
at
was a
math.
math nerd. He was a math nerd. And he was such a big math nerd that he won a statewide competition, this is in California, for beating up other California math nerds. And this is while he was still in school, obviously. Now, everybody back then knew that one day he would be a billionaire, so he didn't get into any trouble for beating up the other math nerds.
I can't tell if
And
this
it
is a
was.
bit or this really happened.
No, he won a math. What are they called? Decathlons? Triathlons? I
Oh,
don't
the
fucking.
mathletes shit.
Yes,
Oh,
he won
jeez.
a statewide mathletes thing, came
That's like
first.
ultra nerd territory.
Yeah.
That's like the nerds that other nerds call nerds.
The nerds are like, dude, I sit with you. We've got a reputation to maintain, you know what I mean? Anyway, so it was in those wonder years back in the US, winning mathlete competitions and gaining notoriety in the world of chess that it was in those years that he figured out that he loved Ayn Rand and Ronald Reagan. And I think that to me sets up what he would later become.
Yeah, I mean that's a classic phase that every nerd gets into, so.
Exactly. Especially if they're later going to end up as incels. He then went to college, where he studied philosophy at Stanford, as one does. And it's particularly hilarious that he studied philosophy at Stanford because he has spent most of his adult life talking about how young adults should drop out of college and just pursue life because it's that easy to do without a college degree. He not only studied philosophy at Stanford, but it was while he was there that he found that he disliked identity politics and multiculturalism. And he then started what we now know as the Stanford Review, which, for those of you that don't know, it's a highly conservative and libertarian rag that is best used as toilet paper for the diarrhea ward at an IBS clinic. Now, he stayed at the Stanford Review until he moved to Stanford Law. And it was there that he learned that competition sucks, and instead he decided he likes monopolies way more. He was influenced by some radical thinker who had the idea that competition sucks because eventually the competitors take end of the end goal. So yeah, like I can think of a million other reasons why competition sucks, and he literally focused on the stupidest one.
So you hold on, you cut out for that for the reason. Why did he think competition sucked?
He thought competition sucked because it eventually leads to competitors focusing on each other rather than the end goal of the competition. And while this is a legitimate concern of competition, it's by far the least of the problems with competition in the capitalist market sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a race, you got to break the other racer's legs. That's just how a race works.
Yeah, I mean, That's how I've always won races.
I know. I have a 15-minute mile. You think I can win a fucking race without breaking everyone else's legs? Come on.
Well, I'm never running against you because I've got a 10-minute mile.
Yeah, so you would be among the first to go.
Yeah, I would. I would because I also don't know any self-defense techniques. I didn't study Taekwondo for 14 years.
Well, it wasn't Taekwondo, but we'll move on from that.
Okay, so after graduating, he tried to clerk for the Supreme Court, but he was rejected because even a SCOTUS justice knows when someone's a piece of shit. Facing this rejection, he decided to work for a securities trader, but didn't last long there because he couldn't do enough of what he then claimed. Essentially, he broke it down saying it wasn't transcendental enough. Now, I can only imagine that what he meant was he doesn't get enough opportunity to meditate while on the job. So he moved to derivatives trading.
Who the fuck thinks work is ever going to be transcendent?
Billionaire douchebags
Like,
in the making.
how,
People
I don't understand.
who love Reagan and Rand.
I don't
Like,
understand how anyone like loves their job. That's fucking crazy to me.
it's
That's
fine to
like the
love
craziest
work,
thing.
but the moment you love a job, it literally means that you cannot tell the difference between the flavor of beautiful ice cream and the bottom of a billionaire's boot.
Yeah.
Literally, if you can't tell that difference, you're fucked. You really are.
Also, I want to backtrack a little bit. It says he said he tried to clerk for the Supreme Court. That doesn't seem like something that you try to do right out of law school.
Yeah.
Unless you like know someone on the Supreme Court.
Well, look, it's possible that he did know someone, and I do know that right out of law school, they do offer a limited number of clerking positions, very lowly clerking positions,
So
to recent graduates.
he'd be like getting Alito's coffee or something, basically.
Oh no. He would be getting the coffee for an assistant to the assistant of one of the assistant secretaries under bootlicker person. Like they literally their experience is limited to checking documents and that are not even ever going to be touched by a justice. It's really stupid work.
That's the only thing that honestly I think is good about the whole high-powered career thing is when you start out, you're like tormented by someone who treats you like a slave. So you have at least if you're going to be like some powerful asshole, you have to go through that for a few years first, which is pretty cool to me.
Well, if you don't already come from money, then
Right.
sure.
Yeah.
But the moment that you do come from money, you get to skip over levels 1 to 5,000 and go
Yeah.
straight to the boss levels.
Well, I'm only trying to think of the bad stuff right now, so
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
ignore that
Okay,
for now.
so he couldn't do meditation as a securities trader, so he moved to derivatives trading, which obviously opportunity for meditation and enough time to write speeches for conservative douchebag and Secretary of Education William Bennett under the Reagan administration. But eventually he had to do work, and so knowing he would eventually be a billionaire, he rejected this after about 3 years. Finally, Peter T was ready to embark on his elevator ride to billionairedom. A ride that started by getting a bunch of people to invest in Thiel Capital Management, which he then used to invest in cryptography company Confinity. Confinity went on to launch PayPal. Soon they merged with Ylang Ylang Musk's company, X.com. You've never heard of Ylang
No, I don't know what that is. Is
Ylang?
that a really
Okay.
biting insult in Afrikaans or something?
No, Ylang Ylang is like it's like a skin cream made from aloe or something. I
Oh.
don't know. It sounds close enough to Elon that I like going there.
So he got other people to invest in Thiel Capital Management. And is that
and
not
just
that... an investment firm?
Yes.
So he convinced other people that he would be better at managing their money than they are?
Exactly.
That's insane to me. Who was fucking dumb enough to do this? I mean, I guess he was right.
She was like, what? Oh, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. He understood how the capitalist game must be played. But that doesn't mean that he's... it doesn't mean he did anything.
I just want to know, what he said to them. Like, you know all that money you have that I don't have, that I've never had before? Give it all to me, and then I will do it better than you. I'll make more money than you with your money.
Before he actually struck it rich, he actually made money in the beginning. He invested $100,000 in a buddy of his company, a startup, and that bombed because it was stupid. And so like it wasn't like, oh, give me your money and I'll make you money. And then he made money and everyone was happy. No. He was a genuine idiot and probably had to get a lot of guidance from people that were better at the game than he was.
So he must have gotten some real rubes to invest in that company.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do, man. No. We need to let's move to Silicon Valley and get some fucking rubes to invest money in some stupid company we make up.
That actually sounds like a really good idea. Let's start doing that right after this podcast.
Okay, cool. All right, let's move on.
Sweet. Okay. He got Musk to merge with him, the X.com. And then he got another company called Pixo, which helped PayPal to then go mobile. And for the next 3 years, they literally spent $10 million annually to buy customers, which was fine because by the end of the 3 years, they then sold themselves to eBay for $1.5 billion.
Yeah, that's actually smart. Because now PayPal is fucking everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's,
but
that's
to be fair, they added like 10,000 customers a year thanks to that $10 million payment annually.
Right.
And then.
See, that's
PayPal
the thing that we always go back to.
Really,
capitalists are not trying to maximize profit, because if they were, they wouldn't have spent $10 million a year trying to buy customers. And then they also wouldn't have captured all the market share that made them like the payment processor that literally every website uses now.
Just to be perfectly clear here, they are not the ones that made PayPal so big. They by the time eBay bought them, what eBay was buying was not their customer base or their market share or anything like that. eBay was buying the technology that had been developed because it would help eBay's transactions.
Well,
eBay
was already using them. I remember when this happened, they were already using them. So they just bought it so that they would have control of the payment processor that they used.
Exactly. So eBay was like looked at this and said, wait, why the fuck are we spending as much money as we are in fees to these fuckheads for processing these transactions when we can just buy the fucking company and then save ourselves a bunch of fucking money? That's what they did.
Fees.
And once eBay took over, it was eBay's technical team that developed PayPal and caused it to spread as widely as it did. So
don't, do they still own PayPal? Do you know?
I actually didn't look past.
I'll look it up. You can keep going.
Okay. So it was during this time that people in Silicon Valley called Paul Tritail the Don of PayPal Mafia, even though he was more of a capo or underboss at best. Now, after the sale of PayPal, Tritail went to a life of capitalist gambling. He started a hedge fund that made money by betting the US dollar would weaken and then strengthen, and then by betting on the oil price. That's a big one here. For those of you that listen to our Capital as Power episodes, betting on the oil price is easily the biggest part of capitalism as it exists today.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna. I think we should do a whole episode about oil trading. So I just looked it up. They split in 2015 to 2016. So PayPal is its own company now, which to me that sounds like a mistake because I don't think I don't know. eBay's probably waning in popularity by now, thanks to Amazon. Because who wants to buy something off an auction when you can get it on Amazon?
True.
And Alibaba could take over there too, because Alibaba is basically like eBay, except it's just a store. It's not
there's no
auction.
Yeah. To be fair, I've never bid on anything on eBay. I've only ever straight bought stuff off eBay.
Yeah, I don't think I've bought anything on eBay since like 20, like probably 2006. Yeah.
Okay. Like since they were little toddlers, basically.
Yeah, basically since Amazon came out. Or since Amazon started like selling stuff, I was like, I don't want to bid on anything. That's fucking stupid. If I wanted anything cheap, I would go on Craigslist, which is now waning as well.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if the waning has a lot to do with Amazon. We might look into that more deeply in another episode.
Oh, you know what, though? eBay owns, did own 28% of Craigslist. So before this article that I'm reading came out a couple weeks before, they sold their stake in Craigslist back to Craigslist.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right.
The only reason they would do that would be because they can see the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So after the sale of PayPal, like I said, Toil turned to capitalist gambling and started a hedge fund and bet on the dollar. First weakening and strengthening, and then by betting on the oil price. And eventually, his string of wins came crashing down when he failed to bet correctly on the housing market crash of 2007. And then all the other capitalists pointed at him and laughed as they took their money out of his company. And it was at this point. Yeah, like every time I read about that, all I can picture is, who's that kid from The Simpsons?
Nelson,
who points at Bart and goes, yeah, every single time. And it makes me happy.
Yeah.
So, it was at this point that Porter Train vowed to get revenge on everyone. And much like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, he plotted to wield the Ring of Power to climb his way back to the top. Now, he couldn't find a physical ring of power, so he settled on letting the CIA fund his next big project. Palantir.
We use the CIA to trick the hobbits.
God, you do that so well. I love it. Palantir, which is aptly named after an artifact from the Lord of the Rings. For those of you who are not uber geeks like me.
Basically a crystal ball.
It's a crystal ball that is omniscient, essentially allowing you to see anything, future, past, anywhere in the world, look at anyone, blah, 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 blah. Now, Plutter Tool also owns shares in multiple companies, including Facebook, Founders Fund, Mithril Capital, Valar Ventures. Oh, Founders Fund?
Some investment or the shit. Others.
Founders Fund is responsible for, they call themselves an accelerator fund.
They do like Series B stuff.
Yeah. So it's not an incubator that specifically focuses on taking startups and building them from egglings. It takes already founded companies and then just helps them build further. He owns shares in Mithril Capital, Valar Ventures. And until he became an outspoken Trump supporter, he was part of the Y Combinator startup as well, which is also an accelerator. He got kicked out of Y Combinator for supporting Trump.
Okay.
Basically, all the rest of Silicon Valley looked at him and said, "Get the fuck out of here, you idiot."
Yeah, Trump is so bad for Silicon Valley and business in general.
Yeah.
Makes sense why they would hate him so much.
Yeah, he's actually referred to Silicon Valley as a monocultural liberal. God, what was the word he used? I can't remember now.
Monocultural.
No. He actually, it was a village or a hamlet, or he tried to basically reduce all of Silicon Valley down to a small backward place.
Yeah, there's no fucking way that Trump knows the word hamlet.
No, not Trump. I'm talking about Thiel.
Okay. It's like, no, dude, come on.
Hamlet? Do I look like I fucking read Shakespeare? Anyway.
Hamlet, that's like a little pig, right? I love having a hamlet with my fries.
That is the best Trump impersonation you've done yet. You need to work on that because
I don't want to, though, because everyone does. Dude, Alec Baldwin fucking ruined Trump humor.
Yeah, he really did, because it's a fucking brilliant impersonation and the jokes are stupid. So, yeah. Okay, so Thiel has proven that his favorite fetish is dangling his dick into as many pies as possible. But the dick
flavor...
I mean,
as long as they're warm, then, you know, I can understand that. If they're cold, then what are you doing, buddy? But, you know, nice warm pie. Yeah. Makes sense to me.
If it's cold, it's kind of necrophilia.
Yeah.
Okay, but the dick-flavored pie we want to focus in on today is his Ring of Power, Palantir Technologies. I don't know how much research you've done on Palantir.
I only really did the part on Palantir finance.
Okay. Yeah. So, I'll run through this as briefly as possible.
Okay. Why am I not seeing comments? Okay.
Your comments came later, I think. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah, they are showing up. Okay. All right.
Okay. Now, Plotter Tool wasn't satisfied with being Gollum, because Gollum never actually gets to use the Ring of Power for the purpose of power. And so he set out to become Sauron, while probably thinking he was being Gandalf or Elrond or some shit. Now, knowing that capital is power and that we live in the age of information, Tool decided to create an object of immense power. It would allow him to access information about anyone or anything, anytime, anywhere. And he named it Palantir.
Yeah, the name is actually pretty on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit like, really, buddy? Really? Yeah. And also,
it's like naming your company Panopticon or some shit, you know?
Yeah. Which objectively would still be a better name than Facebook. now, he didn't create it alone, or at all for that matter. Instead, he stole an algorithm from a company that later sued him, but he threw money at them to make them go away. But the algorithm alone was not enough. For his creation to be imbued with power, it needed funding from the orc army known as the CIA. While I'm very proud of that one, by the way. While in its infancy, Troll used Palantir to figure out that China spied on other countries, which obviously had never been done by any other country, and it was absolutely shocking.
China spies?
apparently, and let's
dude, I should have read the show notes before we started, because man, I have to think about this for a while.
You're in shock now. Aren't
this
you?
Makes so much sense out of politics. God damn.
Oh god, I'm going to sound like a chipmunk for this entire fucking episode. Now, it was right after, more or less during and right after this big revelation about China spying on India, on Russia, on various military programs. It was around this time that Troll did something very strange. He mixed genres by naming the two main branches of the Palantir company after comic book titles. Cities. namely Gotham and Metropolis. Which I don't get. I don't understand it at all.
I do think this happened in like the last like couple of years. Because they were named Palantir Finance and Palantir something else. I don't remember the other one.
One of the things I read
some, like politics or some. It was like a bit. They were both normal words before.
Yeah. No. I'm not talking about what they officially were named when selling them as products to government or to the private sector. I'm talking about what they were called internally.
Oh, so they were called this internally for a while. Okay, because they actually are called that now.
Yeah. I think eventually he was like, no. Come on, we've got to make it official, guys. We've got to make it official. It's really the coolest thing ever.
What's his name trying to get the company to be named Pied Piper? it's non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable, guys.
Oh God. By the way, I absolutely loved this last season of Silicon Valley.
And yeah, it's great.
I think the reason that I love it so much is because they really depict Silicon Valley capitalism as accurately as possible. And they do take some liberties with technical details and so on and so forth, but for the most part, yeah, they're brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Okay. Now, Palantir Gotham was specifically intended for government use, while Palantir Metropolis was intended for use by the world of finance. Metropolis was used by large companies like JP Morgan to not only observe market trends and assist making investment decisions, but also to spy on their own employees in order to give an early warning of when these employees might get fed up working for their evil overlords. And this obviously then saved these companies a lot of money, and they were so happy that they rewarded Troll by giving him lots of money in round after round after round after round of funding.
Yep.
Yeah, you know more about this JP Morgan Chase thing, so you for
listening. Yeah, I did a little reading about it. There's not a whole lot more there. Palantir Metropolis is a financial data analytics software, which is a really sanitized way to say it takes a bunch of people's data from different sources and then uses that to spy on them. So in April of this year, it came out that they have been using Metropolis to spy on bank employees. So they looked at email communications, recordings of phone conversations, browser and download histories, GPS locations, and even printer activity, which is especially creepy to me. They were looking for disgruntled employees to preserve the security of the bank. So if they found anything suspicious, like employees starting work later, which to me is a sign that a job sucks and they very reasonably don't want to do it, the system would alert a threat team, which would do further surveillance on them, including physical surveillance. So they were having people actually like follow employees around. But the whole thing ended when executives found out that they were also being spied on, which that of course was the unethical part.
Of course. I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't go following around and spying on rich people. That's not right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I got for that part.
Yeah. Okay, so even though this has recently come out, none of this has even remotely stopped Metropolis. They are currently listed as being used by 27 companies in various fields, a third of whom are multi-billion-dollar corporations. So I mean, they're not being used by mom-and-pop stores.
I wonder how much it costs.
Apparently, they struggled right at first because they don't have, or they do have a finalized-ish product that they come in and they install. But what they actually do is they send a team of engineers to your company to work with your data analytics.
An integration team, basically.
Yeah, an integration team. And that apparently was quite exorbitant, and a lot of people didn't like it. Like Hershey's pulled out, Coca-Cola pulled out.
Yeah, I mean, that would be
a bunch of big names.
It said the team was 120 engineers, which would be probably around $20,000 an hour.
Yeah, there or thereabouts.
That's a low estimate, by the way.
Yeah, and then the product obviously doesn't save that much money or help be that predictive, because all of these really big corporations have actually pulled out. But there are still several that are still carrying on with business as usual, loving the money that they can make by looking at the market trends and analysis and looking at their own employees and telling them to fuck off. But the most important part of this entire fantastical tale is Dauron's interaction with the state of Mordor. Now, for those of you who are not following along with the Lord of the Rings analogy, Mordor is the United States.
Yep.
Bloomberg came out with a really interesting article about a week ago. And I've included it in the show notes. I highly recommend that that everyone listening to this go look at our show notes, go find the Bloomberg article, and have a good long read at this.
Yeah, the show notes are good.
Our show notes are fantastic. They're always great.
And we almost always cut stuff out, so you will see some things that are not in the show.
Yeah.
And if you're deaf and you're listening to this right now, you'll be able to know what we're saying.
Exactly. Although why you'd be listening to our podcast if you're deaf is beyond me. Each to their own, whatever blows your head. Okay, so in the last few weeks, a powerful villain known only as the Cheeto has pulled out of an agreement with Iran that lifted sanctions and limited nuclear proliferation.
Hold on a second. Are you talking about President Drumpf? Drumpf the Cheeto man?
No, I don't know who that is. Okay. My character here is a very specific character. He's only known as the Cheeto.
All right, well, let's keep going and see if I can figure out who it is.
Okay, so the Cheeto claimed that the deal was a terrible deal, and he was very unhappy about it, and he wanted to treat it like Russian hotel bedsheets. But the question remained, why would he undermine a deal that took 12 years to develop and that creates amicable relations between Mordor and Iran? And it turns out that the answer lies with Penis Trail and his wondrous Palantir Gotham.
I like that one, Penis Trail.
Now, see, Gotham was a core component of this deal, as it was being used by the International Atomic Energy Agency to keep track of Iran's uranium enrichment program.
Huh.
Now, one of the main reasons why the Cheeto was visited by the European dark elves known as Macaroon and Macaral ahead... I can't keep a straight face on that one.
Yeah, if you're confused about our naming thing, that's Macron and Merkel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said, Macaroon and Mackerel.
Yeah.
Ahead of they came to visit the Cheeto ahead of him exiting the deal in order to convince him that they needed the deal in order to keep track of that uranium. But the Dark Elves didn't know what the Cheeto knew. You see, the Cheeto had a trump card up his sleeve. Unbeknownst to everyone else, the Cheeto had sent his minion, Saruman, who in the underworld is known as Bibi, to steal the secret plans of Iran's nuclear program. And Bibi delivered these just 2 days before the Cheeto had to exit the deal. Now, with these stolen secrets, the Cheeto no longer needed the deal in order to track Iran's uranium. They could simply feed all the details into Thauron's Palantir and thus keep their dark eyes on the uranium. And all the while, they could continue to apply pressure through the dark wizardry of sanctions. Of course, all this directly contradicts Pinta Tiddy's claims that Palantir is entirely unpolitical. And so we have to wonder, No. He has on several occasions claimed that it is entirely unpolitical.
Software to help the government do stuff is in no way political.
Nothing. It is not political at all. It's just a data analytical tool. That's all.
There's a ton of people who hear that and they're like, oh yeah, no, that's yeah, that sounds right. It's not political.
Data analysis. Well, what's political about data? I don't know.
It's just an algorithm. Algorithms can't be political, you know.
It's not like anyone, including I believe your President Trump, he got involved with his party got involved with that other company that did data algorithms, and that wasn't political. That wasn't political. No. Oh, by the way, just because it did come up in my research as well, Palantir did publicly disavow the employee of theirs that went to go work with Cambridge Analytica.
Mm-hmm.
And they very explicitly said that this was a rogue agent working on his private time.
That sounds like a really political thing to me, a rogue agent.
Did I say rogue agent? Oh, wait, that's because that's what they said. So, no, it wasn't now, all of this, really, it seems a bit weird, and it's disconcerting slightly and whatnot. But then you have to remember that Pinter himself said in an essay in 2009 for the Cato Institute, you know, that think tank that doesn't do any political posturing at all. He said back then in an essay that he doesn't think that freedom and democracy are compatible anymore.
Yeah, that's my favorite fucking take from libertarians. The smallest minority is the individual. Democracy is the tyranny of the majority shit.
Yeah, that's the kind of shit that makes Jordan Peterson cry.
Right. And you inevitably ask, okay, so if democracy is the tyranny of the majority, then what should we do that's not tyrannical? And it's having someone like, Peter Thiel, who has billions of dollars and can basically just do whatever he wants, which, of course, is far less tyrannical than, you know, a group of people all having equal amounts of power to decide things for themselves. That's not tyranny at all.
Yeah, like, honestly, have you ever read an Ayn Rand novel? I mean, my God.
No.
Come on.
Never have, never will.
Like, this is why you don't understand economics 101, Ryan. Okay?
Dude, it's so funny. So, there are people that I'm friends with that, you know, I don't think they're stupid or anything, but, like, they'll tell me, oh, you should at least read, you know, The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged, because even if you don't agree with it, you know, it's a good book. I'm like,
it's
1,400 pages. I'm not reading that shit.
I've
no
read
fucking
it.
Way. Oh, you
I've
did?
Read it, and now I want to be very explicit about this. You might not think that these people are stupid, but I've read the stuff, and I'm telling you right now, it is fucking idiotic.
Yeah, I mean, so is Real Housewives, but I enjoy that. So, I don't know.
I don't really want to comment on your taste in reality TV shows, because then we're just going to get personal here, because I enjoy Australian cooking shows.
I'm
going to
start calling
shows.
You a prostitution whore. Nobody wants that.
Okay, so Palantir Gotham and Palantir Metropolis, horrible fucking parts of society.
Yeah.
Really, objectively, some of the worst things to come out of capitalism. You know, people want to throw their hands up and talk about how evil Facebook is for invading their privacy and selling their data and all of that.
Yeah, at least with Facebook, you get something out of it.
Yeah. Palantir knows 10 times more about you than Facebook ever has or ever will. The simple fact is that Palantir isn't they don't have algorithms that are swayed by you saying that you live in Antarctica or trying to mislead the algorithm by liking things that you don't really like and stuff like that. Palantir gets to go through your emails, your phone calls, your everything. It creates.
And they don't even
a
get
map.
The benefit of the doubt of like, oh, this is just for selling ads, or like this is just for targeting products at consumers. No, this is only like the only purposes of this are political. Even the finance one, like they're using it to spy on employees. Like that, it's not even like you can't even frame it as like, oh, they're just this is just like a productive thing. You just don't understand the way that it's productive. No.
Yeah. Although
it's
Facebook
literally what states do.
Yeah. Although Facebook is terrible, at least Facebook is looking at it and saying, look, our business model is that we give you all this shit for free. We need to make money somehow. So we take all the data that you give us and we sell it for advertising.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't understand why they needed 2 days of congressional hearings to understand that shit. But why is there no congressional hearing for Peter Thiel? Why is Palantir getting to fly under the radar?
Because he's with the hashtag resistance.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, so on a lighter note, Pauty Tree is a libertarian. And he wants to create a new form of government. And this is evidenced by funding a project in Fiji. He didn't fund the project in Fiji. He invested $1.7 million in the Seasteading Institute, who aimed to start a libertarian floating island utopia just off the coast of Fiji. And this needed the consent of the Fiji government, which they originally gave for some original testing and experimentation. But just recently, and by recently I mean in April or March, the Fiji government realized that it was probably just going to be used for libertarian child porn marketing videos, and they shut that shit down real quick. For the actual reasoning, there was a lot of pushback from the people of Fiji that were very unhappy with what they were hearing about kickbacks and corruption and everything surrounding the project. And so the Fiji government was pressurized into saying, well, fuck it, they're not going to renew the licenses that were supposed to result in this floating utopia. Every time I say the words libertarian utopia, I want to vomit.
So there's one thing we didn't even put in the show notes, which I've alluded to multiple times already, which is that Peter Thiel drinks blood. So first of all, just to give you an idea of how normal this person is, there is an article whose headline is, "No, Peter Thiel is not harvesting the blood of the young," which, you know, that's a completely
it's objectively
regular false. Thing, you know, regular thing that someone has to claim about someone. But no, he does drink blood. He has repeatedly expressed interest in getting the blood of the young transfused into him to preserve his own longevity. So he's basically. I guess he's kind of like Elizabeth Bathory more than anything.
Well, for those of you that are confused about what we're talking about, there was a literal episode, and we're going to keep referring to it, in Silicon Valley. I think it was season 2. There was an episode where the antagonist of the show, Gavin Belson,
who is
literally
Peter Thiel.
Although Peter Thiel in an interview said that he identified most closely with that the guy that invested in Pied Piper in the beginning, the first...
Oh, the dumbass douchebag guy?
Yeah, the really weird one.
The really weird one.
Not the guy who
invested in like AOL or whatever?
No. Oh. He was the one that was able, like he was a savant, basically. Like he got a Burger King. Yes, that's it.
Oh, no, that's like, not. No, Gavin Belson is Peter Thiel.
Oh, I agree. I'm saying that Peter Thiel said in an interview that he most closely identifies with that other
guy. Delusional prick.
Because he honestly reckons by tasting the poppy seeds or the sesame seeds on a Burger King bun, he's going to be able to predict that Thailand will be the sole producer of sesame seeds in the next coming season because of water shortages. And like, oh, fuck off, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, So Peter Thiel drinks blood. So make sure you tell as many people as possible that, because it's 100% true.
It really is.
Yeah, someone tried to write, Sarah Burr tried to write an article saying, no, he's not harvesting the blood of the young. And this is based on someone she talked to. But it's like, no, Thiel himself has said multiple times that he wants young people's blood to preserve his longevity. Like, there's no dispute about it. He definitely does it. So the one section that I've researched, we can start getting into, which is what Peter Thiel is actually like. So I got a couple articles here that I can just read some passages from, and I think that'll wrap up the show. So the first one is from Vanity Fair, from a writer named Nick Bilton, and it's called My Dinner with Peter Thiel. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to skip ahead.
Does he have a GoFundMe page or something? I feel like I need to compensate this man for the horrible.
I'm sure he makes money for writing for Vanity Fair. That's a pretty big publication. All right, so I'm going to start ahead in the article. The living room was filled with about 30 people, all of whom sat in a circle, picking at their sparsely decorated plates. At the top of the circle. Yes, in Silicon Valley, circles have tops. What? Okay. Thiel
so basically, everyone else is sitting on the ground, and Thiel's the only one allowed to sit in a chair.
Yeah, I don't understand because, like, okay, the top of the circle, I guess, makes sense. Like, if you look at it head on, I don't know. No, it's stupid. You're all Silicon Valley's full of idiots. Thiel sat drinking a glass of champagne like King Joffrey on the Iron Throne. Ugh. That is, if the Iron Throne were a lazy boy.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt because I know you hate Game of Thrones.
Yep.
King Joffrey is objectively one of the most horrible characters that has ever been created. People hated him because the actor that played him did a really good job of getting you to hate the character. But if you were to ever meet this person in real life, you would want to throttle them. Much like I would love to throttle Peter Thiel if I ever met him in real life. So I think this is a good analogy.
Everyone present was asked to introduce themselves. Most people began with, I'm the CEO of, before naming their company and then continuing with, and I graduated magna cum laude. From Harvard, Stanford, or whatever. So this is like a huge fucking self-suck. Like all of Silicon Valley.
Who? Has anyone ever introduced themselves that way to you? Hi, I'm the CEO of so-and-so, and I'm graduated magna cum laude. I'm 45 years old now.
Okay,
but
I can
I'm
understand
still relying
I'm the CEO
this-
of blah, blah, blah. That makes sense, kind of. You know, if you're like at a place in order to meet other... you know, CEOs or something like that, it makes sense to say like, oh, I'm the CEO of this company, but like, and I graduated magna cum laude. Dude, like, okay, first of all, that probably happened at least 2 decades ago, so why are you still sitting on that fucking
are you still riding your own coattails?
Yeah, like, no one, okay, once you get a job, no one fucking cares where you went to college. No one cares, and no one cares how well you did in college. It doesn't matter anymore. You're out of college now. So don't tell anyone. Then the discussion began with Thiel at the center of the conclave. Okay. Skipping ahead, I was struck by a profound epiphany about Silicon Valley. Thiel, in many ways, sums up the entire mentality of the tech industry. He doesn't necessarily care what other people want. So while this author is completely correct, I just think it's funny that this is a profound epiphany that they're having in 2016 when this article was written. If Peter Thiel is on a weird and special diet, then we should all be on a weird and special diet. If Thiel thinks that people shouldn't go to college because it's a waste of time, as he's said innumerable times before, regardless of the way such a decision could affect people's lives in the future, then we are all fools for not dropping out. Thiel, for what it's worth, as Peter mentioned, has a BA and a law degree from Stanford. What I did.
what's really funny to me here is it's basically, I'm a libertarian and I believe highly in individualism. Everyone should be exactly like me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how it is with the whole property rights thing too, because they're always like, oh, if you want to be a communist, you can go start a commune somewhere. You can do that. It's like, okay, well, communism includes not having property rights. So, do you mind if I not respect your property rights and just take your stuff? Oh no. Oh, you do mind? Oh, okay. So you do want to use force on other people. Okay, that makes sense. All right. So skipping ahead again, what I didn't realize after that dinner, but I do see now, is that the actions of these tech elites are only going to become more brazen as they morph society into the world they believe we should live in. Who do you think is going to create the laws on Mars? The U.S. government or Elon Musk and his old coworker and buddy from PayPal, Peter Thiel? And so this article came out before the whole Amazon HQ2 thing started happening, where state and municipal governments were ingratiating themselves to what's his fuck to get the Amazon headquarters to move there. Bezos.
Bezos.
Yeah. And so finally, the salon at Thiel's house lasted 3 hours. Neither the dinner I envisioned, which he thought was going to be some like great feast, like at a Viking hall, neither the dinner I envisioned nor anything close to it was ever served. But as the conversation came to a close, one of the assistants informed us that some chocolates were being placed out in the dining room for people to nibble on the way out. What a fucking psycho this guy is.
Jesus fucking.
So he did invite.
Come to dinner. Right, come to dinner, and I shall not feed you.
Yeah, for dinner. I was invited to a dinner at Peter Thiel's house tonight. Yeah.
And then didn't have dinner.
Okay, like, no, Peter. Okay, Thiel did say a salon. So he did not say dinner. Okay, so that's actually the author's mistake. But having
a
salon.
Sorry, is there a definition of salon that I'm not aware of here?
Yeah, a salon is a thing that rich people from the 18th and 19th century did, where they basically invited their rich, powerful friends over to like have tea and talk about how poor people are lazy and drunk and need to be whipped into effort with scarcity so that they would be happier with themselves. That's what a salon is.
I genuinely didn't know that a salon could be anything other than a hairdresser's place.
Well, it's honestly also a room in a house. It's the name of the room in the house that it would take place in.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have a room for like people to sit in, that's just like chairs. Yeah, that's also a salon.
Yeah, like I've known about that definition, but I didn't realize that you could use it as a noun to describe an actual meeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell, rich people, man.
Yeah.
Make up shit as they go along.
Fucking douchebags.
It pisses me off. Okay, you've got one more article.
Yeah. So this next one is called The Dinner That Destroyed Gawker. And we didn't talk about Gawker, did we?
Yeah, I was going to include Gawker in the notes, but then I was like, oh, for fuck's sakes, man. Gawker to me is, it's a bit of a rag. And so I don't have a problem with the fact that they no longer exist. It does bother me that Peter Thiel, on the simple fucking basis of someone else's saying that they've said some negative things about him, basically went on a decade-long war with them. And won because he's fucking wealthy and powerful. But I wasn't sure if I wanted to dedicate a significant portion of time to it. So
I mean, I think we should, because this wraps back around to what the author was saying, that the actions of the tech elite are only going to become more brazen as they morph society into the world they believe we should live in, because the whole Peter
True,
Thiel
it is
and
an example
Walker
of
thing
pre-order.
Is a massive attack on free speech. Like, we have all these fucking Nazi assholes saying that, you know, free speech is under attack because of libs on campus and, you know, Antifa libtards punching Richard Spencer or whatever, Milo Yiannopoulos. But the actual, like, biggest attack on free speech in recent years was this Gawker case. So to give some background, in 2006 or 2007, Gawker outed Peter Thiel as gay. And, you know, that's not good, I guess. You shouldn't out people. But also, Peter Thiel's a billionaire, so I don't fucking care how he fucking feels. And so Thiel got really mad about this, I guess understandably. But to deal with that anger, he set out to shut Gawker down for writing something. And eventually he won. And so from this TechCrunch article, The Dinner That Destroyed Gawker, apparently this wasn't even his own idea. This was the idea of someone who was a social climber, someone who's trying to move up in the world of Silicon Valley, kind of ingratiate himself to some billionaires and, you know, kind of become rich and powerful on his own. And so what eventually happened was Thiel partnered with Hulk Hogan, who Gawker released a sex tape of, and sued them on that basis, and then got Gawker completely shut down. I think what actually happened was, like, he was awarded, like, shares of Gawker, or like a controlling stake in Gawker or something like that, and then he just shut it down. So basically, a billionaire used his billions of dollars to spend an entire decade and more than $10 million to find any little thing that he could on Gawker doing anything wrong, and then shut them down because of a thing that they said. So that is an actual attack on free speech, as opposed to punching Nazis or yelling at someone on campus because Jordan Peterson doesn't want to use your pronouns.
For the record, if Peter Thiel decided to punch a Nazi, no one would say a fucking word about it.
Probably not, but
I have a feeling he would buy their fucking Nazis family and shut them down, even if it took him a decade and $10 million.
Yeah. All right, so I'll just get through this article real quick because the passages I grabbed are pretty short. One quickly finds that Peter Thiel is a man notoriously averse to small talk, or what a friend once deemed casual bar talk. Okay. Even the most perfunctory comment to Thiel can elicit long, deep pauses of consideration and response. So long you wonder if you've said something monumentally stupid. So really, really regular guy here.
Yeah. It sounds like a perfect guy to have a normal conversation with.
Right. The tiny assumptions that grease the wheels of conversation find no quarter with Thiel. There is no chatting with Peter about the weather or about politics in general. It's got to be, I've been studying opening moves in chess, and I think King's Pawn might be the best one. Or, what do you think about the bubble in higher education? And then you have to be prepared to talk about it at the expert level for hours on end. I have a feeling that he is not quite as much of an expert as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
Especially given he is 2,199th out of 2,200 in that chess association.
Dude, 2,200 is a lot of people, man.
Yeah, it's true. You can't talk about television or music or pop culture because the person you're sitting across from doesn't care about these things, and he couldn't pretend to be familiar with them if he wanted to. So Peter Thiel basically doesn't give a shit about anything except himself and power.
Yeah.
I mean,
don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I don't particularly care about music, or most of pop culture, but that doesn't mean that I don't pay attention to it so that I'm able to converse with the rest of society.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine like someone who, I mean, there's no way that this guy plays sports, right? So he doesn't play sports. He doesn't do small talk. He does not listen to music or watch TV or watch movies or pay attention to pop culture. Like, can you imagine being around a person like that? That would be fucking, like, mind-bendingly torturous to me.
It would be fucking horrible. That's about the best descriptor I could give here.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Like, this guy is completely fucking psychotic. You know, at least Zucker Nerd seems like you could have a conversation with him about something.
At least Musk pays someone to do his social media properly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. At least he plays video games. You know, he does something normal, right?
Yeah.
Thiel, sitting across from Thiel, I would just be worried the whole time that he's like trying to decide if he wants to drink my blood.
That's exactly what I was about to say. It's like, does he look at the entire world, go summing them up, looking at them, thinking, I wonder if they're AB positive?
I'm just imagining that he has like Terminator vision and he's just like constantly scanning the world. And you know, he sees CEOs and it's like, CEO of eBay graduated magna cum laude from Yale. And then like, he sees a poor person and it's just like blood, 20% good, not viable candidate. Like that's what I imagine him looking at the world as,
terminate media.
Yeah. So to make this article a little bit shorter, basically what happens is this person who's a social climber gets into a meeting with Thiel and pulls out this idea using this thing called the briefcase technique, where you open a briefcase and you have a fully fleshed out plan with like estimates and stuff like that in order to get the billionaire interested, or you know, if they don't agree to the plan, then they're supposed to admire your effort in that you put into it. So he pulls out this briefcase plan of like, go find any little thing you can about Gawker to get him shut down by suing them. And so Thiel at first is like, oh, I don't know, you know, the news cycle's over, like it, you know, I've moved on, like I haven't talked about Gawker in a while, blah blah blah. And so this person says, Peter, think about all the people they've hurt. It's going to keep happening. It's only going to get worse. If you, the billionaire, can't do anything about it, who can? And what would follow would be Thiel's attempt to prove that conventional wisdom wrong. So it seems like Thiel is basically Trump without the poo brain. So the guy in the story basically just dared him to take down Gawker. And then he spent over $10 million in a decade to do it.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
And just for those that think that we don't link all our episodes together, this is a direct example of Creorder.
Yes.
Where power is epitomized by owning capital, and the capitalist's ability to reorder society in whatever way they see fit. If they don't like what it is that you have to say about them, then that's it. They'll buy out your company, your family, your friends. They will ruin your life, and there's fuck all you can do about it.
Yeah. And we have this weird perception in this country. I don't know if if people outside of the U.S. think this way as well. But we have this weird idea of the court system in the U.S. as something that over time, like, improves our rights. Like, we think of it, when we think of the court system, we think of, like, the Miranda rights, where when you are arrested, before they would just arrest you, but now they have to tell you all your rights. They have to tell you that you are allowed to have a lawyer, and that you can get the public defender for free, and that you know, you don't have to incriminate yourself and this and that. Or like Roe versus Wade, like before abortion was illegal, but now it's legal thanks to the Supreme Court. Or, you know, there's a bunch of cases like that. I think the issue is we learn about those ones in school, and then we don't learn many other court cases, because the vast majority of court cases are just who has more money? Okay, they win. Whoever can pay the better lawyer, whoever can find a little technicality, or whoever knows the judge, can just win.
And the reason that they can just win is because the U.S. judicial system and the body of law that it represents, it's vast. It is vast, vast, vast amounts of legal terminology. It's statutes, it's state laws, it's county laws, it's municipal laws.
And they all contradict each other.
And there's contradictions, and there's precedents, and there's
overlap, and all that stuff. Yeah,
all of that. And if you don't have the money, you can't employ the paralegals to go through all of that and find that one technicality that gets you off. So, yeah. If you're relying as a poor on a public defender or a public prosecutor to get the job done for you. These
who
are public
basically
defenders.
Has like 5 minutes to spend with you.
Exactly. Like at the moment, my wife and I are busy watching a legal show called For the People, and it depicts ASUAs and public defenders as these these idealistic go-getters who get given a case and then they spend days and days just relentlessly working on it until they win. And don't get me wrong, as far as legal shows go, it's light, easy watching. It's nothing too serious or whatever. But it's a completely unrealistic depiction of reality. In the real world, unless you have fucking money, you're fucked. You stay away from the law specifically because you don't have money. You can't afford to take on the system.
Yeah. The best way to avoid losing in court or losing in court is to just never get sued. And you know, on top of that, like, you know, when we see the court system depicted in media, it's inevitably a trial, but it's something like upwards of 90% of court cases never make it to trial. They're always settled, which is why, like, a lot of the time, you know, if someone does successfully sue a company for discrimination or something like that, it never improves the rights of people because it's always settled out of court. So it never goes to trial and never sets a precedent. So the only ones, the cases that typically go to trial are the ones where the very wealthy entity, usually the corporation, says, you know, we'll settle. And then the person says no. And then they're like, all right, well, fine, fuck you. We'll see you in court. And then they win. And then it makes things worse. So that's, you know, this Gawker thing is a good example of that.
So, well, lesson from today's episode. Yeah, a lesson from today's episode is: if
never
you are
sued.
Poor, don't get sued. Stay away from the law at all costs. In other words, make sure that when you smoke your joint, that you're not going to get caught. Simple as that. Okay.
Yeah. If you're going to try and take down a billionaire Silicon Valley guy, don't out him on your news website. Just poison your blood and give it to him.
Yeah, yeah. If you are writing any pieces on billionaires and you want to succeed in life, make sure that it is a fawning piece that literally depicts them as a god.
Yeah, it would really help if you draw a picture of you licking their taint.
Yeah, they love that.
Yeah.
They love that. Do that now. Okay.
All right. That was the end.
So that's our episode for today on Billionaire Scumbag, Penis Trail. I think that's the one we're going to go with today.
Yeah, Penis Trail. Yep. If you like that, we have more episodes, obviously. We're on Stitcher, all the Android podcast apps, iTunes. If you have iTunes and you liked our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. That helps us out. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/neighborscience. That's also our Facebook page, facebook.com/neighborscience. We're on Twitter at neighborscipod. Peter is at bookcheekite, and I am at handle of rye. And
you can,
our website
also
is postscarcitymagazine.com, where we have the post-scarcity zine and the show notes that we mentioned earlier.
Also, do feel free to check out our Instagram page where we post up our cover art. That's at neighborscience.
Yep. All right. I think that's it.
That's us. That's us done with the plugs for today. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.